So on the last Sunday before Lent, which will be the first Sunday of March this year, the tradition is to celebrate Transfiguration Sunday. And full disclosure, that's one of my favorite Christian holidays. I'm telling you now, you got a month to find a card for me. A little hard to come by, so you may have to work at it. So what we're going to do, though, in our sermon series building up to the Transfiguration is we're going to look at the folks who were there. And just a quick reminder, Transfiguration is when Jesus was up on top of a mountain and he had with him James and John and Peter, and then he was seen talking to Moses and Elijah. And so and it was at that moment that his true glory, his divine nature was revealed. He was shining, he was glowing, he had bright clothing on, everything was sort of changed. And so we're going to just look at those different folks who were there with him and wonder about what they bring to the table, what they help us to see in the seeing of Jesus's true nature. And so today we're going to start with Moses. And there are so many places you could go for Moses, but today we're going to hear a brief snippet from the 34th chapter of Exodus, beginning in the 29th verse. Moses came down from Mount Sinai. As he came down from the mountain with the two tablets of the covenant in his hand, Moses did not know that the skin of his face shone because he had been talking with God. When Aaron and all the Israelites saw Moses, the skin of his face was shining, and they were afraid to come near him. But Moses called to them, and Aaron and all the leaders of the congregation returned to him, and Moses spoke with them. Afterward, all the Israelites came near, and he gave them in commandment all that the Lord had spoken to with him on Mount Sinai. When Moses had finished speaking with them, he put a veil on his face. But whenever Moses went in before the Lord to speak with him, he would take the veil off until he came out. And when he came out and told the Israelites what he had been commanded, the Israelites would see the face of Moses, that the skin of his face was shining, and Moses would put on the veil on his face again until he went in to speak with him. This is the word of God for us, the people of God. Thanks be to God. So why was Moses at the Transfiguration? Of course, Moses had been long dead, so he was brought out of death to be standing physically with Jesus, talking to Jesus. Why, of all the different people that Jesus could have called up in that moment, why Moses? Some see Moses just as a physical embodiment of the law. Moses is associated with the first five books, the Torah, and so in a way he really represents what God had given from Sinai, the law. Maybe Moses is there in part because of the way he was the main liberator. He led the people out of captivity in Egypt and led them to their freedom, to the promised land. Maybe it's because God appointed him as a leader, and really Moses, by God's grace and with God's power, helped to save the Israelites from themselves through the years. All of these are perfectly good and appropriate reasons that Moses may have been at the Transfiguration, but I suspect that this story that I just read is part of it too. Moses reflecting, shining after being in God's presence. After all, at the Transfiguration, Jesus is shining. And so when Moses is with him, it's a way of being together. There's a way of reflecting the divine nature that Moses had been with, and it's appropriate that he would be a shiner, someone who's shining, standing in Jesus' transfigured presence. More deeply, part of the reason that we see Jesus revealed at the Transfiguration is it's a reminder that we can all help the world to see who Jesus is. That in this day and age, we too can be a part of sharing, shining the light, reflecting the light, becoming more and more like Jesus too. So part of what Moses reminds us is that our job is to learn how to shine, learn how to reflect, learn how to be a light too. So how does he do it? What can we learn from Moses in his shining? There's only one scene in the scriptures, really, between Moses' childhood and between his late adulthood. So between the ages of about 1 month to 80, we only get one scene. It's a scene I'm sure some of you remember. It was when he'd been raised in Pharaoh's household, and then he's out wandering in the fields, and he sees an overseer abusing an Israelite. And Moses walks up to them. He looks around, doesn't see anyone watching, and he strikes the overseer and kills him. The next day, he walks out the same field, sees a couple of Israelites fighting with each other, and he goes to intervene, like, hey, y'all, stop doing this. You don't need to be attacking each other. And they say, well, what are you going to do? Same thing you did to that overseer yesterday? And so Moses realizes that word has gotten out, and the scriptures say that Pharaoh wanted to kill him. And so Moses flees, runs off to the land of Midian, and marries into a family of shepherds, and spends about 40 years living in obscurity, tending sheep. It's almost unimaginable that the man that stood over the dead overseer, a murderer who has to flee, is the same man that shines before God on the top of the mountain. It's kind of unimaginable. But when you think about it, there are so many steps between that murder scene and shining that lead to him reflecting, shining, being a light. It's not just because he happened to walk up to God's presence and began to light up. Think of all the things that happened between those moments. He had some type of prayer life that opened him up to even see that bush when it was burning in the wilderness. He heard God's voice then, which takes incredible spiritual maturity. Clearly, he was praying. He was the one who helped discern and to write down and to share law. He had been up on the mountain many times before he began to shine. All of those movements, all of those steps were part of Moses' changing. All of those steps were part of Moses' changing. It wasn't just one moment. This week I was at a conference and I stayed in an apartment, and it was one of those where it has a small little kitchenette, and when you leave, you're supposed to take all of the dirty dishes and put them into the dishwasher, press start, and that's it. And I got to tell you, it was a glorious moment for me. It was so satisfying to take those dirty dishes, put them in that little box, and know I would probably never see those dishes again. Then I went home. And yesterday, friends, we ran the dishwasher 3 times. And there were still dirty dishes. I don't know where they come from. Now, part of me would love to live a life where I could just throw my dishes away. But that's not really the right way to live, is it? There is something about living where we make messes and we clean them up on a daily basis that really shows that we're actually truly living. Spiritually, there are times where we expect to just press the button once on the dishwasher, let them run, and never see the dishes again. Yes, I came to one worship service. I'm good to go, right? Oh, yes, I know the Bible. I read John 3:16 once. You know, I tried praying. I asked to get an A on a test. God didn't deliver, and that's it. I'm done praying. Too often, we have that kind of mentality that the life of faith is just a one and done. But Moses reflected God's light. Moses shined because he was willing to change not just once, but on a daily basis. For Moses, it was not a one-time thing. It was a process. And if we want to shine like Moses, we got to remember it is a journey. It is a process, especially when we come against the hard things in life. Moses most especially shows us what it means to persevere through the hard times. Think about how many times Moses must have been tempted to quit. His very first interaction after God has called him, his first interaction with Pharaoh, walks up to Pharaoh and says, Pharaoh, why don't you let my people just have a little time to go worship? Just a three-day retreat's all I need, Pharaoh. And Pharaoh says, thank you, Moses. I really appreciate you letting me know how much downtime the Hebrews have. And so I'm going to respond to that by having you all make bricks, but instead of giving you straw for the bricks, you've got to go find that with all that spare time you've got. And so then Moses walked away from that, and he met a whole bunch of angry Israelites whose lives had just gotten a lot harder. Don't you think he wanted to run? And then, you know, he goes up to Pharaoh and he by God's grace, is able to call plague upon plague, and frogs come and the river turns to blood, but Pharaoh's heart just keeps getting harder and harder. And don't you think Moses, as Pharaoh just is entrenched, don't you think Moses might have wanted to just step away? And then, of course, there's that moment where Moses is up on the mountain. He is talking to God face to face. God uses God's finger to write out the Ten Commandments on big tablets of stone. And Moses has been up there. Literally, his life's at risk, because if you're in the presence of God like that, you know, it was known that you could lose your very life. And Moses turns around, having done all that, and he sees the people down below. And what have they done? They have taken gold, and they've made an idol. And while Moses is talking to God, they have been worshiping a cow. It's like someone saying, I'm going to church, and they go to Chick-fil-A. It doesn't work. Can you imagine how angry he must have been? Can you imagine? But he didn't quit. Moses never quit. No matter how tempted he was, he stayed at it. And friends, that is part of the reason that he shined. In the early 1700s, there was an Anglican priest that was came to the colonies. It wasn't even the United States. Came to the colonies, went to Georgia, and went with the purpose of converting Native Americans. But as he started to try to make inroads, there was no fruit to be had. There was no interest among the Native Americans to convert. And so he turned his attention to the English settlers. And it was equally as fruitless for him. They really didn't want anything to do with him. The only thing he really achieved in that time was he met a young lady that he thought might be a love interest, but he couldn't decide. He kind of waffled back and forth. So she got fed up with him. And she decided she was going to marry somebody else. And then she came to worship. And a day like today, they were serving Holy Communion, and she walked up. And when she walked up, he said, nope, and would not serve her. We're not going to reenact that later, don't worry. And he would not serve her, and her family was well-connected, and so their response actually was to try to have him arrested. So he had to flee the country, made his way up to Charleston, back to England with his tail between his legs, an abject failure. Surely he wanted to quit. Surely he wanted to go find some sheep to tend somewhere in England, but he didn't. And you probably can guess his name, John Wesley, founder of the Methodist movement. We would not be here today if he had not persevered. There was a woman riding a train one time in Calcutta, India, and as she was making her way, she heard the voice of God clearly speak to her, I want to use you for my glory, wilt thou refuse? Following the energy from that voice, she went and founded an agency, a community of service, and every day she prayed to hear the voice again, and for decades, she did not hear the voice. And yet she persevered. She continued to answer the calling despite not hearing that voice for years. You probably guessed her name too, Mother Teresa. In this day and age, we take our ability to turn on the light and make darkness go away for granted. Most of us can walk into a room and just flip a switch at night and then the room lights up. The ancients couldn't do that. Imagine, you know, if your main source of light is a fire and you're in a small hut or a cave and you step outside, the darkness out there was real. It was palpable. Spiritually, we expect to have things sometimes just happen at the flip of a switch. But I think that people like Moses and John Wesley and Mother Teresa, I think their light shines because of persevering through the darkness. Spiritually, if we want to shine like them, our job is to persevere too. It doesn't always come easy. And sometimes it's the hardest part that helps us to shine the most. Now, looking around this room, I see many of you were probably not alive back in 1985. But use your imaginations for just a minute. Just kind of zero in. For those of you who, like me, were alive in 1985, remember what it was like. Remember how Back to the Future came out that year? If you really want to feel old, remember that 10 years ago is when their future was, when they went to the future. It's really awesome. Do you remember your synchronicity cassette tape that you would press a button called rewind to go back to hear your favorite song, Every Breath You Take, number three, track number three? Remember all those things from 1985? I want you to imagine that back in 1985, you were called to go on a quest, and your job was to walk all over North America to Cary, North Carolina. And so you wandered, you've been wandering since 1985, and you finally get into North Carolina, and you're walking down Interstate 40, you're walking east, coming from the mountains, and you see the signs that say Cary, North Carolina on I-40, and you walk up the exit. You get to the top of the exit, and that's it. You keel over. You don't get to see First United Methodist Church here. You don't get to see that park. You don't get to see what's coming next at Ashworth's. You don't get to see any of it, even though you've been walking for 40 years. That's Moses. For 40 years, Moses wandered the wilderness with the Israelites. Then he gets to the edge of the promised land, and God says, sorry, Moses, you can look, but you can't touch. And Moses doesn't get to go in. I've always viewed that as one of the most cruel, heartbreaking ends to a person's story. But then, as I pondered it from this angle, I see it a little differently, because I want you to imagine, what would it have been like if Moses had gotten to crossover? Would the land have become known, instead of Israel, would it have been called Mosesville? And would the religion not have been Judaism? Might it have been Mosesianism? And instead of worshiping a golden calf, might not they have eventually erected a statue of Moses that all the people knelt and bowed down over? Moses, in his incredible humility, despite his shining, realized that the point of his light wasn't that folks would kneel down and worship him. The point of his light was to shine on the one who gave him the light. The point of his light was to shine on the one who gave him the light. Mother Teresa once said, "The work is God's work and not our work. That is why we must do it well." How often have we spoiled God's work to try to get glory for ourselves? If you go to England and go see John Wesley's tomb, the very last thing on his inscription says this: "Reader, if thou art constrained to bless the instrument," i.e., if you were really wanting to say something nice about John Wesley, the instrument, "give God the glory." Give God the glory. Moses' shining is a model for us to shine. At the end of the day, what makes our light have purpose is not that folks would look at us, but that our light might shine upon the one who gives us light. May we have the resolve to shine like Moses. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, amen.